Hi, it is a great pleasure to be here. And so I'll be talking about some of the ongoing work, you know, it's a work in progress and so on. But at least the first part of the talk is from this paper, and the version 2 of the paper should be, you know, like online by this evening. Okay, so let me first, you know, like try to remind you guys what various words in the title mean, and on the way, you know, like also tell you why I'm interested in this kind of stuff. Okay, so first of all, hydrodynamics. By hydrodynamics, you know, I just mean so given a quantum field theory, so at some finite temperature and chemical potential, you know, like we are interested in the long distance properties of it. You know, this is a very common question that we ask about these things. So a lot of theories, you know, like in a lot of different phases, actually, you know, like have a hydrodynamic phase. So they are. I'll take relativistic theories. So with Lorentz invariants, so they are described by velocity, u nu. You know, like which is normalized like that, and the temperatures, chemical potentials. So you can have other fluctuations and other low-lying modes, low energy modes, and so on, which won't worry us. So I'll just, you know, like consider these degrees of freedom. Okay, so that's what I mean by hydrodynamics. Now, what I mean by anomaly polynomial. Okay, so first, what there are various things which I call as anomalies. And I'll be talking about a particular thing, which is, you know, particular kind of anomalies. So what I want is a theory to have a global symmetry. And this means, as Noether told us, that there is a current which is conserved. Okay. Now, you know, like I try to, you know, I couple this theory to non-dynamical gauge fields corresponding to the symmetry, and it happens in a lot of systems that the current is not conserved. Current is no more conserved. Okay. So I'm looking at a situation like this, that there's a global symmetry in the theory. So these are what some, you know, people would call as global anomalies. So I'm not talking about any gauge anomalies or even mixed anomalies or anything. So these are the anomalies that I'm going to be talking about. There are global symmetries, and which are just conserved, you know, when you don't do anything, and you put them on some kind of non-dynamical background, they stop being conserved. Okay, so typically, you know, like if the current is some J, okay, so let me look at the hot dual of the current, which is some, so I'll work in 2N space time dimensions. So because these, maybe also continuous global symmetry. I won't be talking about discrete anomalies and so on. So, you know, like, so there is a 2n minus 1 form, which if you integrate, you know, like over the space, you get the total charge. And this should be 0, you know, if it is conserved. But it gets, you know, like, for example, a term like this, where f is just dA. Okay. And if you try to, if it is Lorentz symmetry that you're interested in, then, you know, like if you try to put it on some curved manifold, then you can have things like f to the power something and phased over various representations and so on. So, okay. So this is typically, you know, like what happens. Okay, so these are all non-dynamical gauge fields.
And this is the kind of situation that I'm going to talk about.
Okay, good. Now, I'm interested in these coefficients for a moment. Now, okay, so why I'm interested in these coefficients? So these coefficients are, in some sense, a measure of, you know, like the amount of chiral matter in your theory, in some precise sense. And it is often the case that, you know, in long wavelengths, we want to understand what are the chiral matter in the theory that surveys in the long wavelength, and what are the things that contribute to the anomaly and so on. Okay, so this is typically, you know, like characterized for two n dimension. This is typically characterized by a 2n plus 2 degree polynomial. In eigenvalues of these guys, so basically F and R, and that is what one calls as an anomaly polynomial. Okay, so good. So now I can ask, okay, so you know, like if you can measure this anomaly polynomial given a theory, you know, like you have some idea of what are your, you know, like what are the chiral excitations? It's some measure of what, how many chiral excitations are there in your theory, and so on. Okay. Now, my agenda is, okay, so I ask, you know, I start with this question, which is basically, how do I measure this, or how do I see this in hydrodynamics? Okay. Now, you know, phrased this way, it's kind of a straightforward question, you know, you would think. You know, all that you do is, like, after all, you know, these currents survive a long wavelength limit. These are conserved currents. So if these guys are slowly varying, then, you know, hydrodynamics has some conserved charges. You just look at how it is violated. And you just see these coefficients, so that's that. So this, you know, like, has an obvious answer, okay, which is just look at. So why is that? You know, like, okay, so that's an answer. That's definitely a right answer. But you know, like, this is kind of you know, like, slightly unsatisfying in some sense, because what you're saying is that, you know, like, or rather, you know, like, okay. I don't know. You know, this might be a satisfying answer, but, you know, like, but there's often the case that, you know, like, we can't, we are interested in systems, and one wants to measure, you know, like, have a measure of this chiral excitations, how many chiral excitations are there, without having to, you know, like, put the system in some background, and, you know, like, and so one can ask, you know, like, a more stronger question, which is that, can I do this? Then this background is not there. Now that is not a very straightforward question to answer. Okay, because I mean we do. Okay, first of all, you know, like you know, so these numbers are still there. Okay, and we know that, you know, like, these numbers are preserved under renormalization and so on. So in some sense, you know, they are characteristic of a theory. They are protected quantities and all that. But the easiest way to, you know, like, understand these numbers is actually, you know, like, do this, okay. So, but I don't want to do that, okay. I want to do hydro, okay, without, you know, with only things in my system, putting the system at finite temperature and chemical potential, and I just want to find these numbers, okay, without, yeah. No, you can look at, I mean, what do you mean fluctuation? You can look at two-point functions of the current, provided you can translate that into some hydrodynamic coefficient, which you often can.
Yeah. So again, at this point, you haven't told us yet which hydrodynamics to look at, because there's no velocities yet.
Yeah, so I'm being general, and I'll be general for some time, because, you know, like, I want to first make some general statements. And then I'll come to some particular theories. So, I mean, all that I require of the theory are these things. So, this kind of. So, can I do this when, you know, like fn r are 0? Okay. So, one thing that you asked is definitely you have n point functions, and one would expect, you know, like from quad identities and so on, that at some point, endpoint functions, these numbers should show up. Okay, but what exactly are we looking at from the hydrodynamic point of view? Okay, so first of all, you know, like just what you said, you know, tells me that, you know, that it is possible. Right. Okay. So this is not a. This is not a question that is, you know, like we don't even know whether we can do this. Okay. It should be that, you know, like if you look at some correct hydrodynamic property in some clever way, you should be able to read off that numbers. Okay. Okay, good. So to do this, you know, like so this is the agenda for this day. And you can tell me, you know, like at the end of the day whether and I think, you know, at least I don't know whether I'll succeed in determining all numbers, but at least a series, you know, like at least a bunch of numbers can be determined, and you know, like with various assumptions and so on, and you can tell me how much I succeeded at the end of this talk. Okay, good. So the first thing that one wants to know, say this is one, this is what one wants to do, is that, you know, like is to look for some kind of a transport in hydro. So the hydrodynamics has some energy momentum current, which tells you how the energy momentum is transported. It has some charge currents, and it has some entropy currents. And so on. So this is, and you can have other things depending on what theory you're looking at. But yeah. So this is generically true of the class of theories that I'm looking at. So what we want is some coefficients in the constitutive relations of these theories. Okay. So first of all, you know, like so I want a polynomial here. Okay. So first of all, you can ask, where is the polynomial in hydrodynamics? Yeah. Is there anything in hydrodynamics which is any transport in hydrodynamics which is characterized by a polynomial? Okay. And I spend the next few minutes, okay, trying to convince you guys that that there is a polynomial if you look at certain kind of transfer. Okay. So to do that, let me first define further my notations and so on. Okay. So I know for this whole argument, it's you know, it's useful to just use forms and so on. So okay. So U is the one form, which is a velocity. Okay. And then A is another one form, which is just acceleration, which is just U dot grad U mu. And okay, I can take the exterior derivative of U. And so this has two components. One is like, you know, like in the rest. Okay, this you can decompose this way. Okay, where this omega is what is called a vorticity. As you can see, you know, like just a half curl U in the rest thing. Okay, if you are in 3 plus 1D.
What's the symbol in front of the omega?
It's supposed to be a 2. That's just some convention. Is it really bad? Okay. It's my. Okay.
Yeah, they'll just ask me in case something is.
Yes. Okay. Good. Now, you know, like, they established that there's a polynomial. It's actually, you know, like, useful to actually, okay, so first of all, I need to access these coefficients. Okay. So what I will do is a trick where, you know, like, I first turn on, put it on the background, and then eventually I set the background to zero. Okay. So I have a background F. Okay. So you know, let me just consider the U1 symmetry. You can generalize this easily. So, you know, like, and let F be the gauge field associated, the non-potential gauge field that you turn on.
Okay.
It feels like. If you turn on, and in hydrodynamics, you know, you can decompose this F into, okay, so first of all, you can define an electric field, okay, which is just the local restraint of the fluid, okay, which is just F mu, okay, so it's a one form, and then you can decompose this guy also that way. This is just, okay. So, yeah. So this is basically the magnetic field. And what I'm going to look at is, okay, so this G mu nu has some expansion. Okay, so in hydrodynamics, you know, like it can have energy plus some pressure. Something like that. Plus a series of terms. So this is some derivative expansion in velocities, temperatures, change of potentials, and so on. So all these guys are functions of local temperature and chemical potential. So what I'm going to look at is, you know, like, so you can have similarly for J mu and J mu s, so this is some charge density times the entropy density. So these are just, you know, just what happens when you don't have any fluctuations and you're just doing thermodynamics. And all the other derivatives are turned on, you know, if you are considering fluctuations about thermodynamics. Okay, so what I'm going to look at is a particular class of transfer coefficients. Okay, so you know, like in particular, you can have in this thing, you can have so if there's a heat current which is perpendicular to the velocity, the rest frame. Then you know, like it will have a term like that. So that's the energy current. Okay, good. So I'll work with. In general, this has a lot of terms. If you take a general theory, you know, you have a lot of various transport coefficients. You can have viscosity and everything.
Okay.
U.
Q
is the heat current.
But it's
mean
from U.
Yeah. This Q also has mu, T, and U. But I'm assuming that it's perpendicular to U. Okay. So this is just, you know, like if you go to the rest frame. Okay. So you have, and then you look at the heat current. And that is some Q vector. Okay. If you want, you know, the Q mu is just some with a minus sign. Subtract the thermodynamics. So these are just the things that I've written down are just the equilibrium part. Okay, when there are no currents, and then you know you can just go slightly away from equilibrium, and then you can look at what is the heat. Okay, Good. So what I'm going to look at is, I'm going to look at a particular subset of transport coefficients. Obviously, I'm not going to talk about all the transport coefficients. You know, that's like talking about the entire hydrodynamics. So there's a subset of transport coefficients, which I will call it as denoted by the subscript anomaly, because you know this is the thing which I eventually related to anomaly. So I'm just interested in in particular, you know, like there can be some tensor terms, okay, which can also come from anomaly, which I'm not talking about presently. So I just want to talk about some heat currents, entropy currents, and charge currents, okay, in this system, okay, which I, you know, so there's a subset. So I've thrown out a lot of terms, and I'm just identifying a particular class of terms, and I'm calling it these, okay. So you know, like in a moment, it will be clear what the form of these currents are. Okay, so what kind of terms do I want to collect in these? Okay, so what I want to collect is terms of the form, so I'm including dimensions. So each of these currents, so each of them is a vector. So if you these bars just denote a dual. Okay, just multiplying by its epsilon and lambda sigma. So each of them will be some 2n minus 1 forms. So what I'm looking at is a term like omega, which is the vorticity that I defined there. And terms which just go like, these are all perpendicular. So I'm just interested in terms which go like that.
So omega is a form?
Yes, it's a two form.
What does it mean to raise it to some power?
I'm just wedging it.
Okay. Wedging, okay.
Yeah, wedging it so many times. Okay. So of course, you know, these guys should add up to 2n minus 2. N minus 1, because each of them are two form. Okay, good. So I'm looking at, I'm just in this, you know, like collection of terms, which has infinite number of terms in hydrodynamic expansion, I'm just interested in these coefficients. Okay, good. And, you know, like, and what I'm claiming is that, you know, like these kind of coefficients, so there are, of course, some functions of T and mu, which will precede these coefficients. And what I'm trying to argue is that, you know, these functions are the function that I'm interested in. Okay. Good. So how am I going to argue that, you know, that these coefficients are actually related to the anomalies? Okay. So I'll make some assumptions. Okay. So the first assumption that I'll make, is it two on the side? Should I? Okay. So the first assumption I make is that these transports are all, you know, like are all adiabatic in the sense that, you know, like they are reversible. Okay. What I mean is that, you know, like. So every transport, different fluid configurations will turn on different terms, and if you can, you know, if you find a fluid configuration where there are only omegas and b's, okay. So what I'm assuming, to start with, is that, you know, like in that flow you don't create any entropy, okay. And this can be, you know, like this assumption can be translated into some very specific equation, and that equation looks like this. I'll just write down that equation, and you can find a more proper derivation of why the other terms don't matter, why I can take this out and so on in the paper. Okay, but I'll just write in the equation and I'll just try to tell you why, you know, intuitively you can understand why this is the equation that I should be looking at. Okay, so what I'm looking at is something like this. So this is a charge current. So, times plus. So you can find a more proper derivation in the paper, but this is not, this I think is kind of intuitive. So this is my anomaly, which is of that form. So I'm just working flat space time for a moment. So what I've written down. So what I've written on is basically first law. The change in the energy is T times change in the entropy plus mu times change in the current. That is valid if your thing is reversible. So there's no net entropy production. So this adiabatic assumption. That these terms, if just they are present. There's no entropy production. You can just, put it, into the conservation laws, and you'll get something like this. So there's this term, which you can just think of it as a pseudo force. So there's an energy creation because the particle is, the fluid element is accelerating. So I'm looking at the energy at the rest frame. So there's a pseudo force that particle sees, which is proportional to its energy, in some sense. So it's acceleration times energy, and that is the stuff. And this is just work done by the electric field, which is E times Q. And this is the work done by the pseudo force. So it should be true. So if this thing is adiabatic, this should be true. That this kind of an equation should be true.
So how does the anomaly enter into the equation?
I've turned on the F. I've turned on a background for a moment. So it just enters into the. So what are the equation I'm solving? I'm solving something like gravity T mu nu has some electric force. Something like that. And this has the anomaly. So now I put it on a background. So this obvious thing happens. That my hydrodynamics sees that there is a non-conservation of charge. So what I'm going to do is basically So look at this equation and see what are the solutions of this equation. And after getting a solution, I'll set the F to zero. And you'll see that there's a particular term which survives even then, which actually takes all the information about the numbers here, which is basically my stuff.
You set R to zero?
R to zero. So I'm setting R to zero. I'm just working in flat space. So is there any questions? Is this fine?
Is it intuitively obvious that the anomaly shows up there in that mu dj?
You can just put it here and argue that the entropy production should be due to completely other terms. Okay, and this is the equation that you get. I'm just, you know, like, okay.
So
I mean,
is that zero?
Which is zero?
The string multiplying the
unit? No.
So that
because the J has all the other terms. Okay, even when you turn off everything else, there's an at least a charge density times U. Okay, so
what is the J left the subscript mean?
So the J bar anum is a particular subset of terms which are only of this form. Okay, so divergence of that is not zero, or equal to anum. Okay. In particular, even if other terms are turned off, there's always this thermodynamic equilibrium contribution. So this might not be okay. You can derive this if you just go through, you know, like just these equations, putting various terms and putting this adiabatic condition. Okay. And you know, yeah.
So adiabatic means
that these terms don't create entropy.
Okay. That should be.
No entropy.
But that's not the divergence of the entropy current is zero.
Divergence of the entropy current only from these terms is zero. Yes. You know the. Okay. If all other terms are turned off, okay. If you're in a fluid configuration where there's no shear or anything, where there's no viscosity which is taking, then the divergence of the total entropy current should be zero. Yes. So
the only contribution to the divergence of the entropy current is from this anomalous current. That's what we
mean. Rather the other way around. Okay. The only contributions from the divergence is from the other terms. Because this is non-dissipated. What I'm assuming is that this kind of a transport is non-dissipated. Okay. And so all dissipation is due to the other terms. For example, you know, there will be a term like this, which is basically is a shear where eta is some viscosity. So in general, that will cause dissipation. It will cause entropy production. Okay. So what I'm assuming is that, you know, like these terms don't do that. The terms that I have separated out and put them in this don't do that.
How do we know this is correct?
How do you know this is correct? Okay. It is just an assumption for a moment. Okay. So let's just say it's just an.
It will be posteriori.
It will be a posteriori clear, at least in some examples. You know, like, I don't know whether that will be completely convincing enough. Okay. But yeah. Okay. But that is the equation that I want to solve. And you can just, you know, look at what are the functions t and mu, which you can put here for that this equation gets solved. So you can now play around, okay, with various functions of t and mu, and try to satisfy this equation. And after some amount of playing around, you realize that, you know, like, basically, you know, like, the various class of solutions that you can find are, okay, solutions of that equation you can find are parametrized by a polynomial. A polynomial, an n plus 1 degree polynomial. So in my space time dimensions is 2n. And in temperature and chemical potential, okay, Okay, so this is the degree. So this is a homogeneous polynomial, first of all. Okay. So you have, you can have a term like, okay. So there's one condition that, you know, like, there is no term linear in P. You can show that. I mean, this just sums up the equations. In the sense that if you put, try to put a term linear in T, it doesn't work. But you can have T squared times 2 to the power n minus 1. It's a simple equation. Okay.
It's homogeneous?
It's homogeneous. It's homogeneous in T and mu, and it has a degree n plus 1. I'll just tell you how this polynomial gives you the solution. So I'm just trying to parameterize the space of solutions. So I'm first telling you that it is parameterized by this polynomial. Okay. So now we come to your question. How does this polynomial? So let's say I have a polynomial like this. So the statement is that for every such polynomial, I can give you a solution of that equation. Okay. So how do I get the solution? Okay. So so what they do is that, you know, first I construct a Gibbs free energy current, okay, from this polynomial in the following way. So what I do is that I take this polynomial, and wherever T occurs, I replace it by 2 omega times T. And wherever mu occurs, I replace it with b plus 2 omega times mu. Okay? And then I subtract from it. So I subtract from it basically the omega equal to 0 pieces. So, okay. This guy and the linear piece, omega times, yeah, basically. Which is just a linear piece in Taylor expansion about omega equal to 0. So that the answer that I've got here has starts with at least starts with omega squared.
So what did you subtract from it? Can you say it again?
Okay, so what I'm going to, so this is a polynomial.
Yeah, I understand.
So now I get a polynomial in omega t, d, mu, and so on. Okay, so what I'm going to do is that I'm just going to throw out the constant, I'm going to Taylor expand this about omega equal to 0. Okay, and I'm going to throw out the constant term, throw out the linear term.
Linear in omega.
Yeah, linear in omega. Yes. And then I, you'll see why I have to do that. Then I divide by 2 omega the whole square. Okay. First of all, there's an n plus 1 degree polynomial. So, okay, this will give me a 2n plus 2 degree, 2n plus 2 form. Right? Because, you know, like each of them is a 2 form. There's a vorticity, there's a magnetic field. Each of these are 2 forms, so I get 2n plus 2 form. Now, of course, you know, I'm working 2n dimension, there's really no 2n plus 2 form. Okay. So what I'm going to do is, like, I have to divide by 2 omega squared. Okay. So then, you know, it gives me 2n minus 1, 2n minus 2 form. Okay. And then I get 30. Okay, so this is the first step. Step 1 is this polynomial. Take a polynomial. Step 2 is construct this Gibbs free energy current.
Is this different than just starting with
the 2n? This is different because you see, okay, you would think that when I'm subtracting out the linear term, so why did I put some terms? But those terms determine B because, you see, because I have kind of, I mean, to show that all these terms actually occur, you know, you just do this procedure. So Okay, so I'm just trying to parameterize the solution of input. And then step three, if you just get the charge current as something like that, by differentiating with respect to mu, get the entropy current, you're differentiating the field with respect to T, and you get the energy current, the heat current, by just doing this. Which is basically what you would do in thermodynamics. You get a Gibbs free energy, you get the charge, you differentiate with respect to mu, you get the entropy, you differentiate with respect to T, and to get the internal energy, which is T. Okay. So this I'm claiming gives you the solution, the general solution of the Gans-Seidel equation. It may look slightly funny, but that's what it is.
Just about the dimensions, sorry.
Okay.
Why is the current a 2n minus 2 form?
It is wedge, okay. You see, okay. So the total power here should be n minus, okay. The total power here should be n minus 1. That is clear because these currents are 2n minus 1 forms. I have a wedge u. So these two guys should be 2n minus 2 forms. Now each of these guys have two forms. So there should be n minus 1 of them. First of all. Okay, good. Now if I take this polynomial and do just this substitution, I get an n plus 1. You know, the total power is actually n plus 1. Okay. So what I do is that I throw these terms and divide by some 2 power.
There's a wedge u. I see. Okay. Thanks.
It's not obvious that non-dissipative is the same as thermodynamically, but I guess you're showing us that those two things are the same.
Sorry, and all the I'm not talking about all the non-dissipative terms, right? I'm looking at some very specific terms in the hydrodynamic expansion, and I'm making them non-dissipative. I mean, there are so many other things which are happening in hydrodynamics which are non-dissipative. So it is not very So this is, it's kind of, I'm just taking the result, you know, I don't have a very simple way of showing that this is true, okay, but you know, like, if you just play with that equation and take the divergence of these vorticities and magnetic fields and so on and so forth, you see that to satisfy the equation, you have to do this.
Sorry,
are you saying
B is constant?
No.
You're not
assuming anything? No. All of these are locally varying this. Okay.
So for every dimension, there's just one polynomial, obviously. It's a unique polynomial.
No, these numbers, of course, I don't know what they are. I'm just doing some general analysis. The numbers will depend on the system. I'm just... So for every system in some even dimension, you give me this polynomial, I'll give you those curves. I'll give you those transport coefficients. That's all I'm trying to do. Okay. I mean, for general analysis, you don't expect it to determine actually some these coefficients.
So they're not related to coefficients in alpha.
Sorry?
They're not related to alpha.
They are, I'm just trying to, okay. Yeah, right. They are related to the coefficient in alpha. Okay. First thing, is that this coefficient, okay, so let's say my alpha is in general like that. Okay. Then this coefficient is just something like this, with a minus sign. Okay, this alpha, okay, actually, if your anomaly is this, actually the anomaly polynomial from which such an anomaly comes actually is. This is actually the covariant anomaly, which comes from this anomaly problem. But the point is that so at least I mean when all the r's are zero, okay, there was one number to determine, and that one number is actually going and sitting in this polynomial. So this coefficient is just fixed by the anomaly. So this is a particular transport in hydrodynamics, which is an interesting statement. A particular transport in hydrodynamics, there's a particular transport coefficient which is completely fixed by anomaly. Of course, you know, like, I mean, I'm not doing entire justice to the various, you know, the history of such terms and so on and so forth. But at least in 3+1D, okay, this kind of an argument was made by Sun and Siroka in the paper. In the paper with this octave number. Okay. So in some sense, this is just some generalization of that argument they didn't take into account the temperature and so on, they didn't get all the other terms, but basic idea is completely inside. Okay, so and then there are a lot of various things which have, kind of terms have very complicated history. Unfortunately, I don't have time to go into them. But okay, good. So now, of course, I can claim success in one coefficient. Okay, there are still all the other coefficients. Okay, first of all, of course, you really want to know that if I actually turn off all the electric and magnetic fields, can I still see this coefficient? And indeed, you can. So this just becomes something like so. I'm taking all the magnetic fields to zero, as I promised to do, and you see that this guy just becomes
Sorry,
are you saying that
if you put the thing on
the
flat space,
yes,
then that polynomial has to be just
mu
to the n plus 1?
No.
There are still other terms.
Yeah, but at zero temperature, all the other terms go away. In general, there are other terms.
So that this polynomial is not equal to the Galois polynomial.
Not yet. Okay. But we are starting. First coefficient we've got. Okay.
You have these high powers of this vorticity omega. Does that mean you're working rather high order in a gradient expansion?
Yes. So I'm working very high order in gradient expansion, which can be just counted. Omega has basically one derivative in velocity, which is curl u. So I'm looking at the n minus 1th derivative.
I'm wondering then if you should also include gradients of the temperature, since that maybe could be traded for a curvature or something like this.
So what you're asking is that I am digging out these terms somewhere deep inside this expansion. You're right about that. And what you're saying is that, there are other terms in the expansion. And when you're looking at derivative expansions, when you're looking at some high derivative terms, there's a lot of ambiguity on what do you mean by those high derivative terms. There's a lot of redefinitions and so on. Okay. Okay, what I'm arguing is that they don't matter, okay, Because in a few minutes I try to define a canonical way where those terms is occur. Okay. It's not obvious. It's not obvious that, you know, like I'm digging out some terms from here and these coefficients are even well defined, you know, because they can undergo redefinition, and indeed they do undergo redefinitions in the this thing. So what I'm trying to parameterize is some invariant definition under those redefinitions. Okay. Some invariant information. Okay. So this is in some particular frame. Of defining velocities and temperatures and chemical potentials. Okay. But okay, good. So this is just. So I have been very general, but it's so interesting that, you know, at least we can fix one coefficient and we can read out the one coefficient. Of course, there are more coefficients to read off. There are all these coefficients which pre-multiply R, and the question is that how am I going to read them off? Okay, good. So for those coefficients, you know, like at this moment, there's no general argument that those coefficients are actually related to these coefficients. Okay. But there's some evidence that they are, and I just present those evidence. Okay, so a lot of this evidence was actually that they are related to these other coefficients in 3 plus 1D. Okay. So first I'll present the evidence that various people have collected. Okay, on why this is related. Okay, and then I'll present a computation in arbitrary dimensions, at least in field theories, where I show that it is related. But okay. So first of all, in 3 plus 1 dimension, so what I'm going to do is like, okay, what happens to the, one can ask what happens to other terms. Okay. Now, so in a theory of, okay, so then you're like, there's no general argument. So you compute this in various theories and see what happens. Okay. Okay, so first theory, you just free fermions, free wave fermions. Actually, this computation, you know, was done by a lot of different people in various ways, but there was a Kubo formula computation more recently in this paper by, let's see. Landsteiner, Megias, okay, and the paper that I'm talking about is this arcane number. Okay. Where they basically showed that polynomial, okay, for this this guy, is just given by okay, so what they did was they just considered a bunch of free fermions with some arbitrary charges, okay, and under some U1 field, and they actually computed these transport coefficients, okay, by some kind of a Kubo formula, which you can do in 3 plus 1D because it's a low enough dimension that there's a Kubo formula for it. So in general, you know, the same transport coefficients, it's very difficult to find a Kubo formula to calculate them. But in 3 plus 1D, you know, like you can do that, and they calculated it. And what they saw was this. So this is basically, this 3 factor of 2 pi square are just, you know, like, I mean, you can just go and check that they give the correct anomaly for these guys. But this sigma q cube is the diagram that they are all familiar with. This is a triangular diagram where you have a u1, which is proportional to sigma q cube over all the left fermions. Yeah. So this is done over wave functions of only one chirality. And this guy actually represents in 3 plus 1D the mixed gravitational anomaly, where you have a U1 here and gravitons. Yeah. Okay. So at least in free fermion, there's another coefficient. There's no linear T coefficient, as I said. Okay. And so there's one another coefficient, and which is just this. In fact, in all the examples that I calculated, there are only even powers of T, I guess, but there may be some reason why there are only even powers of T in the polynomial, but okay. But I don't know. These coefficients are not very well understood. I mean, in the sense that you can calculate them in various theories, huh?
They're only even powers of R, not the
polynomial. Yes. So it's consistent with, you know, where I'm trying to go. But I don't have a proof that there is only even powers of T. There should be some way of proving it, though. But, okay, so at least in 3 plus 1D, this is true. Okay, so the same guys, okay, so you say, oh, free theory. Somebody computed transfer in free theory, and you can read up the anomaly polynomial, which basically has these coefficients from just looking at this polynomial. Okay, maybe something. But how do they believe this? So what these guys did is to go forth and do an ADCFT computation. Okay. I'll just be done in a few minutes. Okay. So there is Landsteiner. Areas, Milgar and Chinadentis. In this paper, what they looked at is some action in ADS pi, like this. So there's a U1 gauge field plus. Some number times a j plus some lambda, okay, times average of a j. Okay, I can be more careful about this question, but I'm running out of time. And then we look at the paper, and then they had some boundary and the counter terms and so on. So that doesn't matter. But you will realize that, you know, like. So this is basically, you know, like what you would do if you had a dual theory of where these both terms are present. Okay, so you know, if you had this kind of two consonance terms, okay, you would get both these kind of anomalies in the 4D theory at the boundary, the CFT at the boundary. Okay, good. So what they did was they computed these transport coefficients by the CFT methods. By again the Kubo formulae, they just calculated some two-point functions and took the low-frequency limit of it. Okay, and what they found was, so you can normalize these guys to the summation cube and summation Q, and what they found was the same. Okay, so this is a computation at, you know, like infinite coupling in some sense, at large n, in some other theory. But in general, so and this is still true. Okay. So what I would say is that, you know, like this is a non-trivial evidence. Okay. So the statement that these other coefficients actually encode the anomaly coefficients related to the gravitational anomalies. Okay. I mean, I have not given a general thermodynamic proof, like I did for the first coefficient, but I mean, you calculate something in weak coupling, you calculate something in strong coupling. It's the same. And these guys are related to some Chern-Simmons coefficients in bulk, which you don't, you know, like expect to, which you expect to be protected, and so on. So it's a reasonable conjecture that it's a reasonable conjecture that that actually this is what is happening. Okay.
Yeah. Do we not care about flavor currents as well?
These are all flavor currents. I mean, the thing that I was talking about was
the U1 cubed anomaly, and the second one is the next U1 and gravitational anomaly.
Yes.
And are also, if they have some number of fermions, their flavor.
So this U1 is a U1 flavor. I mean, all I'm talking about is a global symmetry. I'm not talking about any anomalies which mix global symmetries with any gauge symmetries at all. I'm not talking about any anomalies involving the gauge symmetries in any length. You can try to, you know, like use the thing, kind of things that I'm trying to say, and put it in the gauge theory, provided the gauge is weakly coupled and so on. But yeah, so all these U1s should be thought of as flavors. That's what I want to say. Does that answer your question? No.
I'm just saying, if you have like three fermions, there's a symmetry which rotates them into one another, right?
If you had three Bethe fermions?
I don't want
to. Okay. Yeah, maybe we can. But yeah.
I have one question regarding this equation on the right board. Hmm. So that's done to obtain relationship with gauge anomalies. So do you have an equation like this that incorporates gravitational anomalies?
There should be, but yeah. I or nobody else has succeeded in trying to solve it. Okay. Basically, no, you can, okay, first of all,
write one down.
You can write one down. You can just make this F and R.
You know, but
you know, and we know how to write down this equation, but.
Is there a derivation of some sort of that kind of equation?
There is a derivation?
Yeah, of that kind of equation.
Okay, this equation is derived from this conservation equation with the adiabatic assumption. You mean like, so what do you mean by derivation?
I see. You just think of this equation as being derived in a curved background.
Yes. You just, I mean, it's all exterior derivatives. They just go over. The complicated thing is to try to write down solutions of that. Yeah, if somebody can write down solutions of that, that would be great. Maybe we could just see why they're related. Yes.
That seems to be sort of asymmetric again. You don't put in the, you put in the background gauge field, but not a background curvature. But then you're all getting some T's out of this thing of T's and mu's in it.
See, eventually I'm putting everything to zero and I'm getting coefficient.
No.
Now by putting magnetic field, I have proved that this coefficient is related. I haven't put the flat space, I haven't gone away from the flat space thing. Maybe that's the reason I can't show that these coefficients are actually the gravitational anomaly coefficients.
So
okay.
Why do you even need those coefficients?
I just found the general solution of that equation.
They could have been zero and they could have solved that
yes.
equation.
Yeah.
So they just drop out.
Yeah. So these are just some homogeneous solutions of that equation, which you can just add. Like only this coefficient is determined. If you turn on the magnetic field, fix it and then turn it off. Okay. So maybe, you know, this coefficient can be determined if you can solve that equation in the same way that I solved. If somebody can do that, that would be great. Yes. You know, so that would be a proof of what I'm trying to do. And it seems to be, you know, like, should work. Because, you know, as I told you, know, like these guys did a weak coupling computation and a strong coupling computation, and it works. OK, so I'm running out of time. So what I'll do is, like, you know, like, I'll just present, you know, like, a particular computation which you're trying to do in kinetic theory and so on. But OK, so the question is that, you know, like, you can try to, you know, like, ask what happens with three fermions in arbitrary dimensions, okay? Whether you can still reproduce this kind of a gravitational. Yeah.
So, if I hadn't added that source, the B field, the alpha beta, I still would have seen that there was an ambiguity in the hydrodynamics. I could have added some, but its coefficient would have been fixed.
Yes. Because in some sense, you see, that's the term which makes this whole equation inhomogeneous. you know, if this term was not there, any solution, and any other solution, if you add it, it will still be a solution. Okay. It's actually, there's something funny about that R. You know, I've been trying to solve it, but it doesn't work. I don't know why. But maybe I'm just being stupid. But okay. Anyway, what was I trying to say? Yes. So I was trying to say, you know, like whether in some general space time dimensions, so someone can go ahead and ask, at least, you know, like in free theories in higher dimensions, is this true? Right? Okay. Now you can't use Kubo formulae and so on, but okay, but you can use you can use some more clever tricks to actually calculate this transfer coefficient.
Why is the Kubo formula not working in higher dimensions?
This is a very high derivative transfer coefficient, uh-huh. And the Kubo formula is very well developed for, you know, higher point functions. Okay. Though I think there should be, I mean, one can, from the answer, I think one can back guess what Kubo formula should be. Okay, but anyway. So there's something else which one can do to actually evaluate this polynomial, this hydrodynamics anomaly polynomial, if you wish. Okay, for higher. So what I want to do is just wait for me on some higher. Yeah. Okay, in some two dimensions. A bunch of waves from yours. And, okay, do I have time to go into how it is derived? Okay, so I'll just roughly tell you how it is derived. It may sound a bit too quick, but, okay, so what you basically do is that you compute this partition function, which is you take the space-time to be some sphere cross R, okay, and you look at something else. And the J's are the angular momentum of the sphere, which are conserved charges. So what I'm trying to do is basically turn on chemical potentials for both the charge and the conserved angular momentum. Okay? And so far just the theory of wave functions. Let's say left functions. A bunch of left fermions with some number, a bunch of charges for some U1 field. And what I'm going to do is that, you know, like I'm going to throw out every term which is left right symmetric. So I'm going to look at this also. Okay. And I'm going to look at this object at in the almost flat space limit. Okay, where roughly if this has a radius R, then I take that R to negative infinity. Okay. And I look at just the leading order term. Okay. And now in the flat space limit, okay, at very high temperatures, you know, like compared to the radius and so on, you would, okay. So first, it's a conformal field theory and so on. So okay. So really what I want is RT and mu by T fixed, omega fixed. Something like that. Okay. Okay, so I'm taking this particular limit. And you see this limit, in this limit, you know, the sphere just becomes very big. Okay. And this partition function, okay, can be thought of as basically, you know, like some kind of an exponential of some free energy. Okay. Which gets contributions from each patch of, you know, okay, so you can think of, first this is an ideal gas of Weyl fermions. Okay, so this free theory of Weyl fermions, which is what I'm interested in. So there's an ideal gas on a sphere, which, because I've turned on a chemical potential for angular momentum, it is rotating. Okay, so it's an ideal gas which is rotating, and I'm making the sphere very large, and what I'm claiming is that, you know, like, so this particular, the leading term, okay, can be computed just from hydrodynamics. By thinking of ideal gas as being made of various patches, okay, and at each patch I put some constitutive relation like the things that I wrote down, okay, and I turn on this kind of transport, okay, and I ask how much is the Gibbs free energy which is carried, how much is the charge carried, how much is the energy carried, and so on and so forth, okay, and from that what one can show is that this guy actually should be proportional to this times some universal factor, something like that. Okay. So what I'm claiming is that there's a fluid which is rotating, okay, and flux characteristics. Okay. I'm not being very careful about some problems, but anyway. So something like this. So this basically is omega dependence is universal and just by putting in that fluid with that kind of a transport coefficient, you can ask if you put it on the fluid and if you calculate the corresponding free energy corresponding to this partition function, what would you get? You would get something like this. Okay. Now I can use this to actually compute this polynomial. Okay. And lo and behold, when I compute this polynomial, I get Pn plus 1 is something like this. 2 pi times and what I want is some t to the power n. So what I'm saying is that you take this function, Taylor expanded t, okay, and look at the t to the power n plus 1 coefficient. So you get some n plus 1 polynomial of t and mu, and that is the polynomial which occurs here. And this, you will realize, is roughly the a hat genus of something which is just to remind you, the anomaly polynomial, okay, of this guy is actually something which looks like this. For its sign. And what you're supposed to look at is some t to the power n plus 1 coefficient. Okay? So, good. So at least in this theory, what I've showed you is that this polynomial is a defining characteristic series of this anomaly polynomial. But yeah. This is depth and so on, but you see that it's same. You can if you're starting to play this game, you can do it for chiral p-forms, which is the last thing I'm going to say, and calculate the anomaly polynomial for that too. And what do you get? So chiral p-forms in, so these are self-dual p-forms, which exists in these 4k plus 2 dimensions. And this polynomial looks like that. And again, you're supposed to look at the t to the power n plus 1 coefficient in 2 dimensions. And the anomaly polynomial for this guy is the standard result that is the same thing, but it's something like that. And this basically comes from looking at these three partition functions. Okay. Good. So at least in three theories, you know, like check that this, these coefficients are completely determined by randomly polynomials, and they are what they are. Okay. And okay. So I haven't been able to talk about the third part at all, which is fine, I guess. but yeah. So that is my point, that you know, that there is this polynomial in hydrodynamics, and if you compute it in three theories, okay, it seems to encode these coefficients of the anomaly polynomial. So in some sense, you know, like this polynomial is kind of an anomaly polynomial for hydrodynamics. Okay.